This is Crucial Tech, a podcast about technology that affects all of us in a format that allows you to consume it in the time it takes to go to and from the grocery store. I'm your host, Lou Covey, and I probably know more about it than you do. And if I don't, I know someone who does. But first, this is turning out to be a series on a conversation that I had with my partner, Joe Vasquez, about what's wrong with journalism in the digital world. And we got into a long discussion, almost an hour long. So we decided to cut it halfway through. And we're probably going to go to a third episode when we include some comments from some journalists that I know. This part will talk about why people consider journalism to be an untrustworthy profession. And the second episode, we're going to get into what you can do to ensure that your news feed or whatever you consume as far as news is going to be on the up and up. But we're going to take this first part about how we've gotten to where we are today. And we're going to do that right after this message from one of our sponsors. This is Lou Covey with Crucial Tech, and Joe Vasquez is back because we're talking about something that means something to both of us, journalism. And it's kind of an important subject right now. And as I said in the preview, you may be wondering what journalism has to do with a tech podcast. But the reality is that everything we get in the form of news media, and pretty much all media, is delivered to us through digital means. It means even our televisions are digital products. And so it connects up with how we use the technology to where the sources of the information are. And we're in a position, people like to say now people don't trust the media, but my experience in media goes back a long time. In fact, I said that I had 40 years experience and suddenly realized, nope, it's now 50 years experience as a journalist.
Time flies, doesn't it, Lou?
Yeah, it does. Most of my experience has been in the form of print journalism. Well, Joe, your background is in broadcast journalism, right?
Yeah, I'm a radio and television guy.
And have things changed much since then?
You know, I think there's quite a few things that changed. It's funny you should mention just a tech podcast because I was thinking, you know, how is this going to fit? And I agree that, you know, most of our journalism these days is consumed through technology. But I also think technology has changed what we categorize as journalism. And I know before we jump into this, you and I, we could talk about this for days on end. So we will do our best to try to remember our little tagline, which is just, you know, information you can consume on your way to the grocery store. Let's do our best to try to keep to that. But
this may even turn into a two-parter because I've got some other journalists that I respect that think they may want to weigh in on this. They haven't yet. So we may have to do a second part with them.
Yeah, I think everybody that I know that's in this field is very, very passionate about this. So if you are a journalist or a PR person, practitioner, a comms person, feel free to drop us a line at footwashermedia.com or use the anchor.fm app. It's easy to do, but I know that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people will have comments to make.
Yeah. And yeah, so going back to what I was saying is that a lot of people say they don't trust journalism. But that's really nothing new. In fact, trust for journalism has never gone above 50%. As much when I look back in all of the studies, people don't trust journalism basically because journalism delivers news that you don't want to hear. In fact, back during the Watergate era, which is when I started cutting my teeth as a journalist, the trust for media was lower than it is today. So from a historical perspective, it's nothing new. But I think what most people don't realize about journalism is that it's a broad title for a wide variety of styles and platforms. I mean, you've got daily news, you've got weekly news, you've got local news, state news, national news, print, broadcast, cable, narrative, gonzo, sports, obituaries, tabloids, citizen, entertainment, corporate, financial, political, and opinion journalism. And that's just a few of them.
Probably, yeah. If you really thought about it, you'd come with a few more, right?
Yeah. Now, the thing is, the style most people consume is broadcast journalism. In fact, the RAND Corporation did a study in 2019, and this is what they found. The primary source of news for 24% of the people is broadcast. Second is online, and that means things like Breitbart and Daily Caller and even Alex Jones. So right now, we're almost half of the people who consume news gets it from broadcast and online. Third is cable news, is at 19%. Fourth is social media. In other words, things that people share on social media and maybe even some news outlets that share on social media, 16% of the people get it from there. What do you think is number five?
I have no idea. In fact, the numbers you just gave kind of shocked me. So, yeah.
So I'll back it up again. 24% is broadcast, 23% is online, 19% is cable, 16% is social media, and 8% is radio.
Wow.
We haven't even gotten to print yet.
Yeah.
And print is at 6%. 6% of the people, their primary source of news is print. And at the bottom is what is called in person. In other words, people stating what they think has happened. They're not journalists. They're just, you might even call them citizen journalists. There's stuff people say, oh, look, I saw something happening down the road. And it could even be rumor. So that's what we've got. And for an old print journalist like myself, that's kind of concerning. Now, one of the reasons people don't trust the media is things like high-profile mistakes and concern about false information online and in print and television journalism might be one of the reasons. For example, more than 50% of consumers say, according to the RAND Corporation, that they believe online news sources, which is the second highest source of news, okay? 50% of consumers believe that those news sources are false. And that 70% report feeling that social media companies are not doing enough to spread to stop the spread of false information, which is really interesting considering that Facebook and Twitter this week decided to stop the dissemination of a New York Post article that seemed to be a little hinky. And the more people get into it, the hinkier it seems. But at the same time, government officials are considering suing or holding hearings about that particular episode. So then there's about 70% of news consumers that say publication of false information is intentional. In other words, they're actually out there deciding to lie to people. And although this number is significantly higher for Republicans than Democrats, it's 92% to 53%, an increasing number of sources might also be eroding trust in news and confusing consumers by seeking fact-based information. While people tend to lump journalism into all journalism styles and platforms, they tend to ignore most of the styles and platforms of as we've just seen. You know, print, radio are virtually nothing compared to the rest. But people assign the same amount of blame and concern to those styles, even though they don't consume them. So, but the thing is, newspapers are more likely to correct their errors than any other source. So the source that most people do not use is the one that carries most of the hatred. And to a journalist like me, that tells me that the belief that the news media is untrustworthy is primarily based on rumor and conventional wisdom.
I think that's pretty easy to, I mean, you can see where that goes, right? When people get told that you know, the media, they're lying, it just lies day in and day out, it's pretty easy to begin to believe that.
Yeah. And that's kind of where we are right now. But journalism, on the whole, is more transparent than any other profession there is. I mean, and basically that's because the product of a journalist's work is made available for viewing to the general public 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. When a journalist makes a mistake, it is so easily discovered. And the first discovery of the error is generally the journalist himself, followed by his editor, and followed by fellow journalists. So within the profession itself, journalists are more likely to call out a mistake publicly than any other profession. You won't find that with doctors. You won't find it with lawyers. You definitely won't find it with politicians. Okay.
So let's take a minute here. Let's back up, because I think this is an important distinction, right?
Yeah.
You are speaking of journalists very specifically, very narrow. You're speaking of professional, paid or unpaid, but people who have what I will call a journalistic code of ethics, essentially. Yep. Which is something that we have published in the Footwasher Media side. It's the ethics when we do things, you know, write things and do podcasts and things. But I think the information that's being consumed is being consumed on a broader basis, right? That there aren't things that we consider journalism today aren't governed by that code of ethics. They aren't professional journalists. And so that's where I think people come away feeling like this misinformation is intentional. And I think in a lot of cases it is. I think where the distinction has to be made is in those cases, that is not what we are talking about when we say journalism.
Right. Let's have an example of this. Tucker Carlson from Fox News. Okay. He is the second most popular, he's now become the most popular personality on Fox News, okay? And a few years ago, he put out a rumor about the assassination of a Democratic operative. And it turned out that was totally false, but he kept pushing it. And eventually he retracted it, but the operative's family was so upset by this, they decided to sue him. And that suit finally reached a conclusion this past month, when Tucker or Fox News's own lawyers argued that nobody believed anything that Tucker Carlson said. And the judge agreed with him. That the only thing that Tucker Carlson says is essentially fiction. And yet, Tucker Carlson is one of the first people to point out errors in journalism. So that's where people get it. But the reality is that most news consumers will only hear about the errors and false reports in the media when the original medium where it was published admits the error, and when another medium discovers it and reports it. So people who say they don't trust the media are trusting the media when the media says we made a mistake. Yeah, one of the things I do every morning in the shower, I put my cell phone in the shower and I listen to a thing called The Economist Intelligencer. Okay, it's just a short podcast. It's about 5 minutes long. It's the Economist Morning Briefing. It's 5 minutes long. Gives me an overall view of world news, you know, and it lasts just long enough so I don't waste water in the shower. You know, it's like 5 minutes. Okay, and every other report generally comes with a disclaimer at the end of the report, talking about something in either the magazine or another one of their podcasts that ended up saying, we made an error in a factual error, and they correct it and then they apologize for it. But I always enjoy that because these guys are on it constantly. And now we've got another issue coming up. And I don't, have you heard about what's going on with the New York Times and the New York Times Guild?
I did, yeah. And I was going to ask you to go into that in a little bit of detail. It'd be great to get your opinion on it. And so give us a quick little rundown of exactly what happened.
Okay, so there was a new, well, actually, it's this particular journalist who he writes opinion journalism. In other words, he does some research and then he writes an opinion, okay? There's a lot of that, okay? It is a form of journalism, but it's not news, okay? And this particular guy, he has been, he's a columnist, or, you know, he writes opinion pieces for the New York Times. And quite often he will report on what he finds to be an insufficiency in something that the New York Times has done. Now, and what's happened is that the New York Times Guild, which is the union of the newsroom, okay, which represents all of the writers and the content producers for the New York Times, decided to attack this guy. I mean, can you think about that? Have you ever heard of a union demanding the firing of a member of their own rank and file?
Yeah, that kind of blows my mind. I mean, yeah. Every other example you have is like you could pretty much get away with anything, and the union is at least going to try to stand with you as long as they can.
So this particular issue they're having with them is that there is another reporter who does podcasts, okay? And podcasts are not actually like news stories that or news reports that you see on the daily, your evening news, okay? It's called narrative journalism. And it was popularized by Truman Capote with his book called First Blood. Was that it? No, True Blood. I can't remember the name of it. It was about a group of convicts who went into a home in the Midwest and murdered a whole bunch of people. Okay, it was a Pulitzer Prize winning. It was a best-selling book. But the whole idea is to write a non-fictional piece like it's a novel. Okay, and it's become very popular today. It's the popular way of doing podcasts. It's the popular way of doing magazine articles. One version of it is gonzo journalism, which was popularized, and pretty much the only guy who did it was Hunter S. Thompson, reporting on presidential elections. But the thing is, it takes a lot of time to read it, and every once in a while, you're going to find some errors in it. So this guy, this one particular podcaster, did a series of podcasts called Caliphate about the atrocities committed by Canadian citizens who went to fight with ISIS in Syria. And this reporter, or this opinion reporter, turns out, he says, well, it looks like all of the primary sources and corroborating sources were fraudulent. The reporter that did the original research assumed they were valid, but the investigative team that worked with this reporter found that she may have been hoodwinked by her own sources. Now, the Guild, they weren't happy about that revelation, but they also didn't like the way he wrote about how she didn't do her job. But the thing is, when I read about this, and I'm thinking, how many organizations announce and then publish the work they do in finding errors of fact? That's just unheard of in any profession.
Yeah, it doesn't happen.
No. So the Gallup organization in 2019, they did a report on the most trusted institutions. Okay. And this is also something that just amazes me. The top five are the military, small business, the police, organized religion, and the presidency. Big business comes in 11th.
Okay. Almost all of those are under attack.
Yeah, they're all under attack, and they all, you know, they're all, none of them are transparent. None of them. Okay, you can see the product of their work, but you can't see, I mean, you can see what they produce, but you can't see how they came to that. And newspapers came in 12th. Let's see. Television news came in 13th, right after the criminal justice system. The only thing that really made sense was Congress was at 11%. So seriously, the public trusts the least transparent organizations more than newspapers, which are the most transparent, which kind of tells me that perspectives are way out of whack.
So, I mean, where do you think that perspective came from is my question. I mean, there's a lot of contradicting things here. I mean, if you look at journalism, you know, one of your main figures has the moniker of the most trusted man in America, but yet the media has always been mistrusted. So where's the disconnect?
There's an old phrase about shooting the messenger, is that when somebody gives you bad news, you immediately hit back at the person who brings you the bad news, not doing something about the bad news. But then there's also the issue of money. I mean, there's a basic idea that all journalists are in it for the money. Okay.
That is not true, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, publishing stuff generally costs money. Okay. And the more popular a particular medium is, the more likely it's going to make money through sponsorships, advertising mostly. And that's where you get people, organizations like Breitbart and Alex Jones, who are online with their products. But they're selling ads, okay? And they're selling ads to specific people. Like there's a radio show, a radio station in the Bay Area that sometimes I listen to simply because I want to see who's actually supporting it. And most of their sponsors are selling futures in gold and boner pills, okay? So it's people who can be easily hoodwinked financially and have a hard time getting an erection. So that takes us now out of the G-rated for this particular broadcast. But the thing is that the less popular a medium is, the less money is actually changing hand. I mean, take the public broadcast system, okay? They're not making a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. Crucial Tech does have advertising. And my account today shows that I have made a grand total of $10.61 in 2 years. So obviously Crucial Tech is not doing it for the money.
And there, my friends, is your transparency.
Yes. Now let's compare that to broadcast and cable news and newspapers. Okay. When radio and TV was founded, they leased their airwaves from the government. So the money went to the government. Okay. And they were required in that lease to provide a certain level of public service to their programming. Mm-hmm. Reporting the news for 30 minutes a day was considered an appropriate response. Then in the mid to late 1950s, the TV networks found out that more people were watching the news every day than anything else they broadcasted. And that on top of that, producing a news show was cheaper than broadcasting a situation comedy. So that 30 minutes became 6 minutes and advertising revenues shot through the roof. Then 60 minutes once a day became 60 twice a day and 30 at midday. And then this guy named Ted Turner in Atlanta said, gee, if we can make that much money off of 2.5 hours a day, imagine what we can do with a 24-hour news station. And CNN was born. And they were followed by Fox News, which added additional channels. And then they added a thing called Headline News. And then came ESPN, all funded by a huge pipeline of advertising revenue and big corporations driving editorial policy. And that's where the concept is that journalism is paid off, because really it is on the broadcast level. But print journalism, which saw some success during this time, especially with the dot-com boom, it didn't really hit the levels that broadcast did. And then when the dot-com bust came, print publications started going out of business quickly. And a study I did about 10 years ago, maybe even longer ago, showed that 90% of the journalists after the dot-com boom were laid off or made part-time freelancers. There's a publication that you and I have worked for a long time called EE Times, Electronic Engineering Times. And at one time, EE Times had about 50 full-time reporters and editors. Okay, it's a major publication. But as time has gone on, they are now down to 5 full-time employees, and the rest of them are all freelancers. Even during that time, print journalists never saw the kind of paydays that on-air reporters and anchors got. I actually knew one weatherman in the Bay Area in the 1990s who was pulling down a high 6 figures, almost 7 figures. So money has always been big in broadcast, but not in print. Print journalists are in it for the work, not the cash. When I left print journalism in the 1970s, I was making just under $10,000 a year, while a friend of mine who worked in a San Francisco radio station made 10 times that amount. So today there are a lot of writing journalists, and I say that because paper is not involved anymore, so you can't really call it print.
Right.
And writing for nonprofit journalism organizations, you have people working for things like the Center for Investigative Journalism in Berkeley, California. And then there's the Alabama Initiative for Independent Journalism and Anthropocene Magazine and the Bay City News Foundation. And you can find a lot of these in an organization called the Institute for Nonprofit News. But like I said, the vast majority of people get their news from either broadcast or cable. So they're not seeing any of this stuff. So it's no wonder that people think that journalism is untrustworthy. It's not that all journalism is untrustworthy, or that even most journalism is untrustworthy. It's just the stuff that most people choose to confirm. As Pogo once said, we have met the enemy, and he is us. That's it for part one. We'll be back with part two later this week, probably on Friday, where we will get into some details about what you can do about it, and maybe even more. So this has been Lou Covey with Joe Basquez at Crucial Tech. This has been a Footwasher Media production.